Come on up. It's story time. Okay, not too close now. Okay. Okay, can I get everybody to sit down? Okay. Come on up, come on, come on. I'm Jack Moriarty, and I'm going to share a story with you today. Butterflies Under Our Hats by Sandy Eisenberg Sasso. Once there was a town called Chelm, where there was no luck. If something could go wrong, it did. The roofs of the houses always leaked. The sidewalks were cracked. The gardens only grew weeds. Nothing was ever right. Some people said, luck comes and goes, but in Chelm's case, it never came. It only went. Others said, there's no such thing as luck. The people of Chelm were certain that luck was real, and somewhere, they had lost it. They looked everywhere, in beds and in the basements, in pant pockets and in pickle barrels, in water wells and wicker baskets. But as luck would have it, they never found any. We never have any luck, they sighed. And so they gave up. They stopped building houses, delayed repairing sidewalks, and quit planting gardens. Then one day, a strange and beautiful woman came to town. No one had ever seen her before. She wore a large purple felt hat over her red hair and a long green dress that matched her eyes. She told the people of Chelm that there was something better than luck. Better than luck? The people weren't sure they believed her, but they listened anyway. Having lost their luck, what else did they have to lose? Tomorrow. At daybreak, the strange woman told, with the purple hat and green eyes, informed the town, butterflies of hope are going to fly into the town square. If you can manage to cover the butterflies with your hats, you will have hope. And hope is better than luck. Some of the townspeople thought the woman was crazy. Nothing was better than luck. But others weren't so sure. The next morning, just as the sun began to rise, the people of Chelm, who couldn't find any luck, went into the town square to look for hope. Just as the red-haired, green-eyed woman had said, clouds of colorful butterflies appeared. They landed on the ground. For a few moments, they just sat there. Their wings fluttered softly. The people were very quiet. They gently placed their hats over the butterflies. There were silk top hats and woolen caps, black berets and bonnets with bows. There were felt fedoras and high hats with pink polka dots. There were fancy fur hats and silly straw hats with feathers, all covering the town square. We have it, they exclaimed. Now we have hope. But just as they said those words, it began to rain. The drizzle became a downpour, and suddenly the people needed their hats. One by one, they took their silk top hats and woolen caps, their black berets and bonnets with bows, their felt fedoras with and high hats with pink polka dots, their fancy fur hats, and their silly straw hats with feathers.
They all took those hats?
They took them, yeah. One by one, the butterflies disappeared. They watched as the last person lifted his hat, and the very last butterfly flapped his wings and rose into the sky. Now, not only don't we have any luck, they sighed, we have lost hope as well. At that very moment, the red-haired, green-eyed woman appeared once again. Her large-brimmed purple felt hat collected the raindrops and kept her hair dry. "Look under your hats," she whispered. The people were puzzled. They had seen the butterflies vanish into the clouds. They were certain there was nothing under their hats, nothing under their black berets and bonnets with bows. The butterflies were gone, and with them, their last hope. As quickly as the rains had come, they stopped. The people lifted their hats, their fancy fur hats and silly straw ones with feathers, and looked inside. Just as they thought, there were no butterflies. "Look," they showed the mysterious woman, "nothing. There's nothing under our hats." "Look again," she whispered, and then disappeared. The people looked under their hats, under their felt fedoras and high hats with polka dots. They could hardly believe it. The butterflies had gone, but they had left a trace of something, a fine, faint powder. They saw it, the trace of the vanished butterflies. And that was all they needed. Hope. The people of Chelm started building houses, repairing sidewalks, and planting gardens. Sometimes their roofs still leaked and their sidewalks still cracked, but not always. Their gardens grew weeds, but also flowers. The people of Chelm no longer looked for luck. They found something much better, and it was there all along, right under their hats. The end. Okay, kids, let me ask you, what does hope mean to you?
Love.
Well, that's it. What does it mean to you, Coco?
Love.
Love? Very good. Anybody else want to talk? You want to talk? Nope. Okay, what does hope mean? Think about it. What does hope mean to you? We have a quiet bunch? Well, I guess Coco said it all for all of us, okay? Good one, Jeremiah.
Emily Dickinson once wrote that hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. Well, after our story today, we might say that hope is the butterfly that perches in the soul. But regardless, the lesson is the same. Our realization here is that hope is not an external entity. Rather, it is an inner presence. It is a very intricate and inherent part of our being. we may feel when we're going through a difficult time, pain, or confusion, like the people of Chelm, that we have lost our hope. But our hope really didn't go anywhere at all. It's still right here inside of us. It just needs to be reactivated. Have you ever asked God for a sign? Anybody ever done that? Please, God, give me a sign, right? Asking for a sign is asking for your hope and your faith to be rekindled. So I remember an episode in my own life at a time when I was going through a very challenging time. It was one of the few times that I actually did ask for a sign. And I remember I was sitting outside under the night sky. I was feeling very sad and very overwhelmed, depleted. And so I looked up and I said, God, I need a little help here. This is more than I can do by myself. Show me what I need to know. And within minutes, I am not kidding, within minutes, I looked up and there was the most brilliant, bright shooting star streaking across the sky right in front of me. Now, was that the universe answering my prayer? Well, I don't know. I'm not sure what caused that, but you know what? It didn't matter because it was a gift in that moment. It reminded me that there's much more going on than we know about. There's a larger context. There's a larger story unfolding, even when we're in the midst of pain and the changes we're going through. It rekindles our hope and our faith to know that there's more happening here than meets the eye, and that it is good. And that sign gave me the message that all was well and all would be well. And so we may need a sign from time to time to have our faith and hope rekindled. Maybe we do that simply through prayer, because faith and hope are very helpful to us as we move through transition. In these 4 weeks, we are studying about the transition process and how to navigate life's major changes. So our faith and our hope help us remember that transitions lead to transformation, that bigger context. You know, a lot of times when we're going through change, we think, well, once I get through all this mess, all this turmoil, all these difficulties, I'll experience transformation. But the reality is, the transformation is occurring every step of the way. The transformation occurs throughout the journey. We lose sight of this often. Think this is just the price we pay and then something big is going to happen. But knowing that it's happening throughout the journey can help us feel grateful even for the challenging times. And in his book, Finding Yourself in Transition, Robert Brummett writes, God is not only guiding us through the transition, but is the very force that is bringing about the transition and the resultant transformation. He says, every transition is an indication that the one presence and one power we call God is seeking to express more fully through us. Does this mean that there's a God up in the sky, a super being playing puppeteer, and, oh, I think I'll make this happen in their life right now? No. What it says to me is that the way of the universe, the way of higher consciousness, the evolutionary impulse is calling us into a higher state of being, one in which we more fully express our innate divinity and we know ourselves as that. So remember in Exodus when Moses encounters the burning bush? It's a wonderful story. So there's Moses and he's out tending the flock, and suddenly he finds himself standing next to a bush that is burning but not being consumed. Well, as if that wasn't enough to take in, a booming voice comes out, and it's God, and God tells him to take off his sandals, that he's standing on holy ground. And then he tells Moses to go to the Pharaoh to tell him that he will be leading his people out of slavery, the Israelites out of Egypt, to the promised land. And Moses' basic reaction is, "Who, me?" And God, he says to God, "Who am I to go to the Pharaoh?" And God responds and says, "I will be with you." And then essentially Moses says, "Well, who are you?" And God responds with that beautiful statement that we translate as, "I am that I am. I will be with you. I am beingness itself. I am the foundation of all that is. I am the grace of all life." And so Moses knows that God will be with him, and this great higher power will see him through. So he was being called into a higher identity. He was being called into a new phase of life, moving into his own transition journey. And when we are going through an ending and moving into a time of great change, we can remember the very same thing. That God is with us and in this journey. That it is because of our higher calling that we are embarking on it. So if you're going through a difficult time in your life, if you're experiencing a lot of change and trying to adjust to new circumstances or great loss, here are three things you can remember. And the first is that it is when we identify solely with our personal self, with our ego, with our personality, that we feel inadequate to the task of transformation. Just as when I was praying, "I can't do this alone," right? It's the personality that imposes limits on us. But when we know ourselves as the great I am, when we begin to identify with that, our higher self, our true nature, we discover that we have unlimited creative power and possibilities within us. And the second thing to know, if you're going through a major change, wherever you are in your journey, you're standing on holy ground. Your experience right now is part of your transformation as God is with you in that. And the third thing is to simply step forward in faith and courage. Put on your hat and get going. And know as you do, that you have all the hope. You may need a sign every now and then to remember, but in reality, you have all the hope, all the faith, all the guidance, all the wisdom, all the love, the power, the will that you need to come through this. You already have what you need, and indeed, all along, it's been right here, under your hat. It is now my joy and honor to invite up Pamela Lentz, who will lead us in a musical meditation with her zither harp.
Good morning. Most people ask what this instrument is, and legally it's a zither harp, but the company that I bought it from called them angel harps, which I like, the name angel harps. It's uniquely tuned, actually, to have the vibrations so that it opens the energy centers in the body called chakras. And it can assist with healing and relaxation and much more. Having played at various organizations, what I've learned most is that the harp is, it's just universal. And it speaks every language. So let's relax, close your eyes if you like, and just flow with the divine music.